brow furrowed, but he refrained from rising to the barb, much to Ma's surprise. Before that changed, Axemand took a step towards him and put a hand on his shoulder guard. He gently but firmly turned Ma towards the polished ochre stone of the Morsolytic.
We meet in a liminal space. A place where life and death are not so far apart as we might wish. It's fitting we remember the dead as we knew them. Ezekiel meant no disrespect to the memory of Verulam. Did you, Ezekiel?
No, I did not.
You see? The restoration of the Morneval has given Ezekiel fresh reserves of empathy and humility.
That made Ma smile, until the full import of Axeman's words hit home. That explained the vague unease he'd felt when he'd seen there were four of them. The others saw the realization in his eyes.
He didn't know, of course. How could he?
Ma rounded on the unknown warrior, taking in his inferior rank.
Who are you? And why are you talking to me as though you're my equal?
The warrior gave a curt bow, barely enough to show respect.
Apologies, Captain Ma. My name is Grail Noctua of the 25th Warlocked.
You're just a squad commander.
Yes, for now.
And you're Morneval. All of you.
Noctua nodded, and Ma saw a cold glimmer of a ruthlessly calculating intelligence. He wondered if the others had seen it.
We need our confraternity restored, now more than ever.
Ma nodded, the muscles in his jaw tight as tension cables in a stormbird's wing.
I know Bakel. He approves?
He does.
Ma felt anger and shame welling in him. But Falcus Kyber stepped forward and clapped both gauntlets on his forearms. He and the master of the Justerin had never been close, but Ma had always respected Kyber's manner.
It's good to have you back. Took your time disposing of a few ragamuffin survivors, eh?
Sybal grinned.
You didn't vox ahead to tell them? Tell them what you did.
Tell us what?
Ma took a breath.
That a war leader of the 10th Legion named Shadrach Medusan was allying those ragamuffin survivors into a fighting force of not inconsiderable strength. We destroyed his fleet at Arisak.
Almost immediately, Ma knew something was wrong when he saw the confused reaction to his pronouncement.
No, Tybalt. I'm afraid Shadrach Medusan is very much alive.
He should have died.
That was the thought uppermost in Ma's mind as he watched grainy picked capture of the Iron Hands fire raptors strafing the dome of revivification with gunfire. High-velocity shells tore through its latticework structure, detonating the cryotubes within and wrecking mechanisms thousands of years old. The fire raptors circled, their center line and waste turrets braying with explosive fire, and the tower upon which the dome sat erupted like a flaming geyser. Horus, Motarian, and Fulgrim were in that dome, a meeting of brothers undone by an attempted decapitating strike. If it hadn't been directed at his own Primarch, Ma would have admired such a gutsy approach, especially in the wake of the White Scar's abortive assassination attempt. To have lain in wait for so long displayed a level of patience Ma had hitherto not encountered in his dealings with Shadrach Medusan. The boarding action he led aboard the Crown of Flame had taught Ma much about the man, his cunning, his determination, and his resilience. Also recklessness and the exploitable desire to strike back hard. But patience? No, that wasn't a virtue he associated with a war leader of the Iron Tenth. Could Medusan be alive? Might he have escaped the slaughter in the Arisak system? It had been so comprehensive a defeat, so thorough in its bloodletting, that it seemed impossible anything could have escaped. He'd watched Medusan's flagship die, seen its guttering hulk tear itself apart in a lethal torsion of reactor detonations and warp implosions. Ma shook his head and returned his attention to the picked capture, the swaying feed coming from a servitor drone attracted by the sudden noise and light. He'd watched this a dozen times already, and still the power of the War Master was astonishing. Horus leapt onto the prow of a gunship, demolishing the Fire Raptor's prow with a single sweep of Worldbreaker. It was the most incredible thing Mar had ever seen. He reached forward. He toggled the ivory switch to loop the broadcast and sat back on his bench seat as the image of the dome reconstituted itself in veils of light. Mar sat in the central courtyard of what might once have been a wealthy merchant's villa, but was now just an empty marble shell. He had brooded within the villa for 5 days, the knowledge of Shadrach Medusant's survival having robbed him of the triumphant news he was to deliver. Small wonder that the Primarch made no time for him. 2 dozen data slates lay scattered on the black-veined flagstones of the courtyard, each filled with notations of enemy actions over the last 3 years, spreading out from Istvan. He'd studied them obsessively for those 5 days, and his eidetic memory was fully conversant with everything they contained. Mar picked up the nearest and scanned its contents again. Acts of sabotage, supply lines cut, fueling asteroids destroyed, and a host of guerrilla engagements where enemy forces had attacked, fallen back, then attacked again. Raven Guard, through and through. The random nature of each strike, and more tellingly its isolation from the others, had kept kept everyone, from registering their importance. But when viewed as being part of a greater whole, the faintest hint of an implacable, resolute, and indefatigable will became apparent.
An iron will.
Ma saw nothing definitive, but each morsel was a tantalizing breadcrumb that pointed to one inescapable conclusion. Shadrach Medusant was indeed alive.
Not just alive, but raising the storm he promised us. New skills. A new level of cunning.
Medusant's supposed defeat had come in the shock spasms following Istvan V. The Iron Hands war leader had fought as he'd always fought, the only way he knew how, gathering whatever resources he could to assemble a fresh fighting force. That was the way of the 10th Legion. If a machine broke down, they did whatever it took to get it working again, replacing broken parts with whatever came to hand. Medusant had taken that credo to its logical extension by incorporating squads from the Salamanders and Raven Guard into his formations. And it had very nearly worked. Ma had destroyed Medusant's agglomerated fleet, but the scattered ad hoc flotillas in the outer reaches of the system had taken much longer to hunt down. In the end, the survivors had been too broken, too dispersed, and too psychologically shattered to endure the ferocity of Mar's vengeful prosecution. Of course, there had been elements that evaded destruction, but he'd believed them to be minor irritations and barely worth notice. The assassination attempt on Dwell was the prism that threw an entirely new and dreadful light on that belief. He reached down and lifted a clay amphora of wine that had somehow survived the city's fall and which he'd found half empty in the basement. It was too thin and watery to his tastes, but just drinking it stoked a fire in his belly as his gen-hanced metabolism countered the alcohol. The wine tasted sour, but everything tasted sour just now. Ma wandered the empty halls of the villa, drinking from the amphora as he went. He had to take his suspicions to Horus Lupercal, but needed to be absolutely sure that what he believed was beyond doubt. Too much certainty and he would be viewed as paranoid, jumping at shadows and seeing threats where none existed. Too little, and Lupercal would dismiss him out of hand, relegating him to the rear echelons of forgotten warriors whose names history wouldn't bother to remember. But hadn't that already happened? How many more times could he be passed over? How many more times could he be ignored? The either and the or. Two nicknames blithely indifferent to the individual heroism of Tybalt Mar and Verulam Moy's achievements. Mar knew how the Legion viewed him. Precise, efficient, and workmanlike. Steady, but without the glories won by men like Sedire, Abaddon, or apparently Grail Nocturne. Even Mar's magnificent victories in the low mountains of murder hadn't changed that perception. He remembered standing in the Strategium of the Vengeful Spirit during the early stages of the War on Murder. Loken had been there, spitefully leaving him to the droning attentions of the Acton crews. The old warrior had been a relic from a bygone age of the Legion, a man whose counsel was rarely sought, but always offered.
I won't be the half-heard.
Mar made his way down a carpeted hallway in the upper levels of the villa, a passageway replete with portraits that bore unmistakable genetic links. Only the most recent picture had no date of death beneath it. A woman, shawled with rich fabrics and draped in expensive jewelry, stared back at him, handsome with rich living and what looked like subtle flesh sculpting.
Did you own this fine dwelling? How did it feel to have it taken from you? To have your dreams crushed under the boots of the sons of Horus?
The portrait was, of course, silent.
Are you even still alive? Perhaps you fled to the interior countryside to wait out the war. Maybe you took refuge in another of your holdings, in the household of a friend.
Mar stepped away from the portrait and hurled the amphora at the wall. It shattered and soaked the picture, drenching it in wine that dripped from its gilt frame.
It doesn't matter. Whatever became of you, you're nothing now. Whatever your achievements, they are as dust in the wind. All your labors, all your dedication, blood, sweat, and tears, all shed for nothing.
He turned as he heard a door opening below, footsteps on marble, too heavy a tread to be anything other than a legionary.
Tybalt, are you in there?
He made his way back through the villa to the head of a fine set of marble and ouslite stairs that split apart midway down their length to curve groundwards in opposing symmetrical arcs. Below was little Horus Axemand, standing in the centre of a mosaic floor of coloured glass tiles that depicted bucolic scenes of Dwell's pastoral antiquity.
What do you want?
To talk, as old friends do when they meet after long absences.
Mar made his way down the stairs, much as the lady of this house must once have done when receiving guests. Axemand waited patiently, his new face regarding Mar quizzically. Belted at his waist was a huge blade of Chthonian blue steel, its edge notched and badly in need of repair.
I want you to know that I put your name forward. For the Mournival, I mean.
But I was rejected.
Ezekiel knows you were a good man. Coming from him, that is a superlative compliment.
But he still rejected my appointment. Which goes some way to explaining why he didn't tear my head off when I insulted him on the landing field.
Axemand nodded.
I'd urge him to be sympathetic. After a while, he agreed.
Mar grinned. Little Horus Axemand had been a true friend to him over the years, but this latest wound in his pride was going to take more than consoling words to salve.
Why was I rejected this time? And please, don't try and sweeten the balm.
Very well. Ezekiel didn't think you had the stomach for the job.
Mar ground his teeth at so casual a dismissal. Axemand shrugged.
He kept pushing for his own men. Choleric types like Kyber, Targost, and Echidon. But we needed balance. I hoped you would be the one to bring it upon your return.
Balance? And yet you let the Widowmaker in. I wonder if you properly understand the concept of balance.
You know Ezekiel. Once he gets an idea in his head, it's next to impossible to shift.
So that's why you made the overture to Grail Noctua. One of his. One of yours.
Something like that.
Mar caught a trace of something else, some other reason behind Axemand's suggestion of Grail Noctua, something he wondered if Axemand himself even understood. He sighed.
I'd offer you some wine, but I think I just smashed the last amphora in Tygen.
Shame.
No, it wasn't very good.
Axemand smiled, and even with his new face, its warmth was genuine.
So, what are we to do if not drink as warriors?
You brought a sword. We could fight.
Would that help?
Help with what?
To balance your humors, because it looks like they need balancing.
There's a courtyard at the center of the villa. That should suffice for an arena. Take up that monstrous blade of yours, and we'll fight.
Mourn it all.
What?
My sword. It's called Mourn It All.
I know how it feels.
Ridiculous!
Abaddon dropped the data slate to the gleaming obsidian table.
That's what they want you to think!
They gathered in one of the sepulchral audience chambers of the Mausolytic, a place where the citizens of Dwell could meet and commune with their ancestors. Octagonal, with semicircular alcoves spaced at regular intervals around the wall, the gloomy and somber chamber had been appropriated by the Mournival for their newly instigated meetings. At Mar's request, they gathered to hear his suspicions of the growing threat of Shadrach Medusan. Axemand sat before a glowing hololith, the light throwing the bruises on his cheek and swollen eye into sharp relief. Their sparring in the villa had been a brutal, punishing affair, of which Mar had taken the honors. Cathartic and not a little liberating, Axemand had been proven correct in that it had balanced Mar's humors. Little Horus studied an entoptic rendering of interlinked icons. Each one was the location of an attack on their or their allies' forces, with a spreading chain of outcomes linking to other attacks and their consequences. It looked so much like a web, Mar half expected to see the image of a glowing spider at its center. Or an iron fist.
It's entirely the opposite, brother. If Tybalt's right, they want us to dismiss them, to view them as a negligible threat until it's too late.
Grail Noctua had a spread of data slates fanned out before him, scrolling through multiple informational cascades at once.
Or Ezekiel's right, and it's all just beating the brush to make noise. To make us think there's a huge force out there working to some unseen plan, and forcing the War Master to divert resources to fight them.
Of all the Mournival, Noctua had thus far asked the most penetrating questions. Aspects Mar himself had not considered, counterpositions, and Advocatus de Avalai refutations that made him feel like he had entered a court-martial with nothing more than circumstantial evidence and hearsay to prove his case. Abaddon paced the floor, his boundless energies keeping him from sitting in one place for any length of time. Kyber sat opposite Axemand, restraining himself from pacing as Abaddon did with visible effort. He tapped the nearest data slate.
If this were true, don't you think Horus Lupercal would have seen it?
Elevation to the Mournival was evidently suiting Kyber. Much to Mar's surprise, it was allowing a maturity he hadn't suspected the Widowmaker was capable of attaining to bloom. He'd asked the one and only question that had given Mar second thoughts about presenting his findings at all.
Lupercal.
He hesitated, knowing he was taking a risk in suggesting any lack on the part of the War Master.
Lupercal's gaze is fixed upon Terra. It keeps him from seeing what is behind us.
Abaddon stopped his pacing. Axemand chuckled.
And you said he didn't have the stomach for this?
The First Captain switched his thunderous gaze between Mar and Axemand and shook his head.
Another one who thinks he knows war better than the War Master. There's nothing here, Mar. Just a lot of smoke with no fire. You were on Istvan. You know what we did there. Do you really think Lupercal would have been so careless as to let enough warriors escape who might form any kind of credible threat?
Mar knew he was on dangerous ground here. To agree with Abaddon was to openly criticize their Primarch, and even Axemand would take a dim view of such open dissent. Speculation was dangerous, so he stuck to facts. He leaned over the table and switched the hololith to display scrolling diagrams that looked like genealogical trees, but which were in fact Legion orders of battle.
This is a full manifest of the enemy forces deployed at Istvan as it was divined at the opening of the assault.
He split the display into three columns, silver, green, and black.
Iron Hands, Salamanders, and Raven Guard. Watch.
One by one, the icons representing enemy squads changed from pale blue to red as Mar fed in casualty reports and recorded exterminations. Noctua twitched.
Even though they are our enemies, it still chills the blood to see so much Legion strength lost.
Don't be foolish. You don't grieve for the enemy when he dies. You give thanks it wasn't you.
Eventually, the display finished updating, leaving the estimated forces a ragged shadow of their former glory.
As best as can be estimated through collated butcher's bills and recovered armor, this is as close to an accurate figure as I can ascribe to the number of warriors who likely escaped Istvan.
The red icons of destroyed Legion formations faded out, and Mar swept the remaining icons together. They didn't fit nearly as neatly as the original diagram, but then this wasn't an order of battle, just a representation of what had likely survived the massacre.
Look at what's left. Look at what we can't account for. I'll wager it's more than you thought, yes? Perhaps 22,000 warriors all told? Give or take a few thousand either side? That's not a force we can just ignore.
Abaddon seemed unconvinced.
So? More God of Istvan than we thought. It still doesn't prove Shadrach Medjuson's behind all these attacks, or that he has some overarching plan. He mustered some resistance here at Dwell, but we defeated him. You broke him at Arisak. If he is in command, then he's doing a pretty poor job of fighting us. These attacks, irritating as they might be, are meaningless in the larger scheme of things.
Mar slid a data slate over the tabletop towards Abaddon.
Are they? Medjuson threatened to raise the storm against us, and that's just what he's done! Look at what these meaningless attacks achieved! An entire company of Sons of Horus diverted from the front lines of the war. Months spent securing Istvan's supply routes, increased security around captured systems, and, more crucially, the slowing of the march to Terra.
Enough!
The first captain slammed his fist down on the table and cracks spread across its mirror-black surface.
You think because Medjuson escaped you once before that he is everywhere now? Do you really expect us to take these guilty delusions of yours to Lupercal? No, Tybalt. Go back to your company and get them ready for war. Within the week, we will leave Dwell for a greater prize.
You won't take this to Lupercal?
No, we will not.
And the rest of you, you agree with this?
Kaiba nodded, as Mar knew he would. Noctua also nodded, but he had at least considered his decision. Axemand placed his palms on the table, but any hopes that little Horus would side with Mar were quickly dashed.
I think there is some merit in this, Tybalt, but I have to agree with my Monevil brothers. If this threat is as dire as you believe, to divert the level of resources you need to deal with it will greatly weaken our thrust on Terra.
Mar nodded slowly and switched the hololith's display from the combined survivor lists to an image of the galactic spiral. Istvan shimmered with a faint nimbus of cerulean light, Terra with a pulsing yellow haze, a blister in need of lancing. He pointed to the tenebrous gulfs of space between the blue and the gold.
Ask yourself this, Mournival. Who knows how much time the remnants of these shattered legions have brought the Emperor and his warriors to fortify, regroup, and prepare? How much closer to Terra would we be now if not for them?
He leaned forwards.
And I'll tell you another thing. If Medjuson is behind these attacks, then he has a plan, and things are only going to get worse.
Kaizen Saibal and Sion Azadine were waiting for him in the pillared approach vestibule beyond the Morzolytic's inner chambers. He marched past them, helm held in the crook of one arm, his other hand gripping the hilt of his sword. He kept up the swift pace until they stood on the scorched granite steps of the Morzolytic, looking out over the Sea of Enna. It was Saibal who finally broke the silence between them.
I'm guessing that didn't go well.
No, it didn't.
And there is no word yet from the Primarch?
None.
But I see you're still set on this course without sanction or authority.
Mar looked up into the burning sky and nodded.
Now, more than ever.
Sorties out towards Dwell's Mandeville Point were rare, and despite the name, such locations were very rarely fixed points in space. The term was equally applied to any point far enough away from the gravity well of a star to allow safe translation into the warp. In essence, any point on a notional sphere surrounding the star could be the Mandeville Point, which made a mockery of any attempt to guard it. Local system pilots and astropaths, of course, knew points upon that sphere where the angles between the Imperial realm and real space intersected to a greater degree and allowed for a smoother warp translation. Occupying regions of space tens of thousands of kilometers wide, they were haunted voids where sourceless voices muttered obscenities and ghosts lurked in the shadows. And such points could be guarded. Three Sons of Horus vessels followed a stately course towards Dwell's Coreward Jump Point, known locally as the Azoth Gate. The two destroyers, the Helicanus and the Cashin, and the frigate Lupercalpa Suivant, bristled with vanes and spikes, mailed fists in the face of the void. The small flotilla had set out from Dwell 6 days ago and were making good time through the asteroid belt spread between the seventh and eighth planets. Mar commanded from the bridge of Lupercalpa Suivant, keeping his vessels in close formation as they navigated between waypoints towards the Azoth Gate. Cosmic dust and micrometeor impacts ablated the hulls of all three vessels, fouling local Auspex sectors with false returns and phantom images. If there were going to be an attack, this would be an ideal location from which to launch it. Despite that, the three shipmasters were making no attempt at stealth. A constant chatter of vox passed between each vessel, and active surveyor sweeps, together with high-energy electromagnetic pulses, lashed the void before them. The Auspex stations on every bridge revealed no trace of enemy presence. Not that Mar expected any. Not yet, at least. The first sign of trouble came when the engines of the Lupercalpa Suivant stuttered with occlusion flare. The venting systems of a starship's drive lines were necessarily extensive, given the volatile plasmas employed in their reactor cores. The fouling of venting systems with void-borne dust was something no captain could afford, carrying as it did the risk of explosive blowback into the reactor cores. When the Master of Engines sent word to the bridge of the Lupercalpa Suivant of ejection failures throughout the engineering decks, Mar immediately shut down the reactors. The best course of action was deliberated. The Master of Engines estimated 13 hours for the servitors to scrub the vents clear, and thus Mar gave the order for the Helicanus and the Cashin to continue onwards. Two vessels on station was better than none. The Lupercalpa Suivant would haul anchor in the shadow of an asteroid and rejoin the flotilla upon the restoration of drive functionality. 11 hours passed before they caught the first hint of another ship on an intercepting parabola. Mar stiffened on the command throne as the Master of Auspex lifted his fist, a withered, fused claw of a thing. He spoke in a sopping gestalt of a dozen or more interleaved voices.
Captain Mar, a vessel approaches.
Designation?
By displacement, a rapid strike cruiser. The mines aboard bear the unmistakable touch of Medusa upon them.
Mar didn't question this last morsel of information. A ship could go as dark as it was possible to go, and still the Lupercalpa Suivant could find it if the mines aboard burned brightly enough. And from the look of the phosphor-bright image on the view screen, The mines on this new ship burned so very brightly. The master of Auspex had once been a warrior of the Sons of Horus, but now he was something both more and less than transhuman. His altered body reclined on a grav couch, pierced through by scores of bubbling tubes and inload cables. His head was encased in a latticework scaffold, and the lid of his skull was crowned by numerous invasive implants to better process the echoing visions he experienced and display them in a usable fashion. Cybal's eye followed the glittering track of the incoming starship.
Looks like you were right. They've been watching us. Who knows for how long?
Mar nodded.
It makes sense. We were the last of the Sons of Horus fleets coming in to dwell. And such a muster speaks of a greater deployment to come. And I can't imagine that Shadrach Medusen wouldn't want to know what Lupercal's next move is.
So he left a vessel lying in wait to watch our movements.
Yes, but whoever is in command of that ship is Iron Hands to the core. He couldn't resist a foundering vessel in an asteroid belt.
More fool him.
Who's to say we wouldn't do the same if Lupercal fell? What risks would we take to strike back at those who cut him down?
Cybal shrugged, unwilling to concede he might make such an error of judgment. Instead, he changed the subject, gesturing towards the Master of Auspex.
As useful as this has proven, it's no end for a warrior of the Legion.
Mar nodded in agreement.
It sits ill with me also, Sergeant. But the results speak for themselves.
Cybal's vox chirruped, and he placed two fingers to his ear. He nodded at what he was hearing.
Enemy vessel, 5,000 kilometers, and closing on our ventral rear quarter.
Coming in behind and below. Classic breaching tactics. They mean to cripple us, then board us.
Azadine has his warriors ready on your word.
Cybal was unable to mask his own urge to be locked in a gunship assault pattern. Mar grinned.
Don't worry, Kaizen. You'll get your chance to fight. You and I both.
The Gorgor X was a rapid strike cruiser of the Vergon clan, old even before the treachery of Horus. It had fought its way clear of Istvan with a shell-shocked cadre of survivors, mainly Iron Hands, but with a solid proportion of Salamanders and a handful of Raven Guard. The Vergon were a proud and isolated clan, and thus the crew of the Gorgor X were well suited to the new way of war forced upon them after Istvan. Its commander was an Iron Father of the 10th Legion named Oktar Uldin, and he swung the Gorgor X in below the stricken Lupercal Pursuivant, using only the smallest bursts of thrust to maneuver. They were operating purely on external visual feeds, the risk of the enemy ship detecting any Auspex sweeps were too great to countenance.
The perfect kill, executed flawlessly.
The enemy's demise would be welcome in and of itself, but to deliver a death blow with such machine-like precision against the War Master's own legion just made this maneuver all the sweeter. Uldin had watched the three vessels surging towards the Azoth Gate and logged them in the ship's database, assaying their speed, armaments, and quirks as they went. The Helicanus, the larger of the two destroyers, was slightly slower adjusting course to port. Its armor looked to have been repaired numerous times on its starboard flank, layered plate over layered plate, making it heavy on the turn. The Cashin had a few seconds latency on its maneuvering igniters, a weakness that a foe with greater agility could turn to its advantage. And it now transpired, the Lupercal Pursuivant had issues with its vent cowlings. Its reactors were burning hot, far beyond any recommended tolerances. If those vents weren't cleared soon, the ship would blow itself to pieces without any help from the Gorgor X. Under normal circumstances, Uldin would not have engaged. His orders, passed down through secretive relays and encoded with the highest priorities, were to watch and wait, to observe and report. That wasn't the Vergan way, especially when intercepted Vox traffic between the enemy ships appeared to confirm that the Lupercalpa Suivant was the flagship of a 16th Legion captain named Tybalt Mar. That this was undoubtedly the same Tybalt Mar whose head Shadrach Meduson had sworn to take made the danger of exposure worth any risk. The dorsal launch tubes were loaded and ready. They would kill the crew of this vessel, render it dark, and then ram it out of the Dwell system with a single high-intensity burst of acceleration. The ship would never be seen again. Its disappearance, a celestial mystery that would never be explained.
On my mark, light them up!
They're making ready to launch.
Counterspread on my command.
It's a risk letting them fire first.
No. It was the only way to get them in close enough. Once we stir the void with enough blood, the sharks will come to feed. And you know the first rule of Void War.
Cybal grinned.
Be the shark.
The first wave of boarding torpedoes raced from the Gorgorex at almost the same instant as a spread of countermeasures launched from the ventral guns of the Lupercalpa Suivant. With a much lighter payload, the Sons of Horus missiles closed the distance between the two ships in the time it took the boarding forces to travel 100 kilometers. Little more than 200-meter-long tubes filled with shrapnel, the countermeasures exploded and formed supersonic clouds of tumbling debris. The torpedoes had no chance to evade, their guidance systems locked until their terminal maneuvers, and fully half were ripped open or sent tumbling off into deep space. Battery fire engaged the rest, and yet more were blasted to ruin before they got to within 50 kilometers. Point defense guns killed the last of them as they executed their terminal dive. Not a single enemy warrior set foot on the Lupercalpa Suivant. Realizing he had been lured into the attack, Oktar Uldin broke off immediately. The Gorgorex's engines fired, but having drifted for so long, it took time to coax them to full power. Time that the Lupercalpa Suivant did not need, having kept its engines hot to maintain the illusion of reactor cores on the verge of overload. Mar swung the frigate around and let the multiple batteries on its prow and portside flank have free rein as it rapidly closed the distance to its prey. The hunted now became the hunter, as slashing arcs of high-yield lasers raked the Gorgorex's length. Its voids were yet to ignite, and detonations marched across the dorsal armor, melting armored plates to molten slag and explosively venting hull compartments to the void. Serfs and menials spiraled out, shock freezing in an instant. The Gorgorex shuddered in pain, but it was a vessel of the Iron Hands, proud and defiant. The voids finally lit as it took its wounding stoically, like a pugilist who knows he cannot win the fight, but will stay on his feet until the last bell. Its engines flared, ready to push it from this one-sided engagement. Its rear quarters exploded as a flurry of torpedoes launched in its rear arc, slammed home, and detonated within the drive cowlings. Swinging out from behind the moon-sized asteroids that had covered their swift turns, Helicanus and Cashin effectively crushed any hope of the Gorgorex's escape. Its engines vanished in an expanding plasma corona, and oxygen bled into the void like glittering silver blood trails. The two destroyers maneuvered into close range. Their guns flayed its voids, collapsing entire quadrants of protection in moments before targeting its point defenses. They pulled away with perfect synchrony as a shadow fell across the Gorgorex. Angular and deadly, an assassin's blade over the face of the sun. Lupercalpa Suivant hove to, so close that the space between it and the Gorgorex danced with Borealis light as the remaining void envelopes overlapped. Generator vanes blew out in flaring surges of feedback. Space burned blue and purple and crimson. A frigate of Lupercalpa Suivant's displacement normally had no capacity to launch strike craft, but its loading bays opened, and three Stormbirds that had spent the voyage from Dwell chained to the deck now fell into space. They rammed their engines to maximum thrust and powered towards their stricken prey. Helpless, the crew of the Gorgorex could only watch and await the inevitable assault. Cybal ducked out from cover to fire down the transverse approach to the main axial.
Don't they know they're beaten?
Return fire tore up the bulkhead behind him. Shrapnel and flakes of metal drifted from the impacts, spiraling in the zero-gravity chill. Behind them, a melter-cut breach gusted with condensing air from the interior of the Stormbird locked to the Gorgorex's hull. Half a dozen Sons of Horus fired back. Mars Honor Squad positioned all around the hexagonal approach. The absence of up or down as relative terms was a benefit of combat in zero gravity. Sion Azadine stood with his mortuary blade poised behind his combat shield. The Eye of Horus emblazoned upon it glinted with a web of frost in the void-chilled corridor.
Would you yield to an enemy who thought you'd beaten? No, but I'm 16th. Even the Iron Tenth can't match that.
They appear to think differently.
Then it's time we disabuse them of that foolishness.
Keeping low, Mar hefted a wide-barreled weapon he'd appropriated from one of the support squads. All cogs, coil-wrapped condensing tubes, and a tight ring of focus blades, the Volkite Caliver was a weapon more suited to lightly armored targets. But it did have the advantage of being utterly lethal in confined spaces.
Since when does a captain deign to wield a caliver?
When he wants the job done yesterday.
Mar depressed the grip trigger. A searing beam of tightly focused energy shot down the transverse approach. It impacted on the far wall and exploded in a billowing cloud of caustic fire. Phosphor-bright trails blazed with sudden, shocking intensity. There were no screams in a vacuum.
Azadine! Go! Now!
Sion Azadine spun out from cover, and his speed was something uncanny. Movement in low gravity was usually slow and painstaking, each step taken with magnetized boots. Mars Champion had no truck with that. Instead, he bounded from wall to wall, pushing off with limbs like coiled springs. He spun away from incoming rounds, and with a last, piston-like thrust from the ceiling, he slammed down onto the deck among the reeling survivors of the Volkite blast. His boots clamped the metal deck, and his sword reaped lives. Sprays of blood hung like red archways in the air. Mar released the Volkite weapon and left it floating behind him.
Let's go!
The rest of his honor squad followed him towards the enemy. Not that he expected to meet any resistance from here on in, since most of the ship's fighting strength had died in the void. All through the enemy ship, breacher squads were converging on strategic targets. Life support, reactor cores, engine spaces. The last thing Mar wanted was for the remaining crew to scuttle their vessel in spite. He needed it in one piece. A starship had numerous routes through its superstructure, but only one to the command bridge, and that target belonged to Mar. By the time he and his warriors reached the main axial, Azadine had killed everyone there. Six bodies floated in the axial, trailing drifting slicks of vivid crimson. A blob of blood affixed itself to Mar's shoulder guard, painting his legion marking in red. He turned and moved up the axial towards the shuttered bridge interlock. Its defense guns weren't firing, which told Mar they were either out of ammunition or no longer functional. Most likely the latter, the arrogance of the Iron Hands leading them to believe they would never be boarded. Reports had come from other areas seized within the ship. Resistance was fierce, but minimal. Clearly it had been operating with something less than a skeleton crew. That they had managed to fly it and fight at all was to be admired. Schematics overlaid the visor display within his helm, his warriors picked out in pale blue. Ma jerked his thumb at the bridge access.
Let's get that open!
The bridge was empty, or as good as empty, it made no difference. A single flesh-spare warrior stood at its center, locked to the deck and with a photonic-edged war scythe. A dozen servitors flanked him, armed with a mix of clubbing weapons and tools adapted to form rudimentary firearms. An Iron Father, if Mar wasn't mistaken. The machinery around him was smashed and cratered, ruined beyond repair and useless. Deliberate sabotage to keep whatever data this vessel's logic engines had once held from falling into enemy hands. But Mar had seen how much information could be retrieved from supposedly irreparable machines by the tech sorceries of the Mechanicum, and knew something of value could probably still be extracted.
I am Octa Ulden. Which of you dogs wishes to die first?
Mar almost laughed.
You and I, we fight an honorable duel to the death. Is that what Shadrach Medusan is teaching you now? Even after Arisak?
Even a warrior with so little flesh left to him couldn't help but react to the name of the 10th Legion's new savior. Ulden dropped into a fighting crouch with his scythe held to one shoulder.
He teaches us that however we die, it will be with honor.
Oh no. It will be screaming in agony when we torment what little flesh you have left beyond anything even you can stand.
He turned away.
He's all yours, Azadine. Make him bleed, but don't kill him. The War Master will want him alive.
They were waiting for Mar when he returned, as he'd known they would be. They denied him the War Master. But what had they expected him to do? Sit meekly by and accept the judgment of those he knew to be wrong? That wasn't the 16th's way of doing things. It wasn't his way of doing things. Not anymore. The Stormbird's engines growled as they powered down, hissing and steaming in the rain. Dwell's atmosphere was paying the inevitable price for a ferocious war fought in low orbit. Numerous space-based gun batteries and dry docks had finally come down, and the sky over Tygen was lousy with distortion. Actinic thunder boomed over the mountains, and electrical tempests danced on the horizon. The smell of wet plazcrete and foaming ocean water was strong. Rain battered the ground and the outer hull of the gunship. Mar, Cybal, and Azadine stood at the top of the assault ramp as a strobing sheet of purple lightning lit the Stormbird's interior.
This could be bad, yes?
It could be. We embarked on an unauthorized mission, took ships without the express consent of the War Master. So yes, this could be bad.
But what we learned from the very presence of the Iron Hands from Ulden, that's got to count for something. Otherwise, what was the point?
That's what I hope.
Azadine wrapped his fingers around the hilt of his mortuary blade.
Oh, this could be bad. They could strip us of our rank, our position, our honor.
They could do a lot worse than that. You've seen some of the changes in the Legion, the things Erebus brought with him. The old Chthonian ways coming back. I'm not saying I'm against that, per se. But some of those ways were left behind for good reason.
Mar straightened his spine.
We're delaying, and we're better than that. Come on.
He set off down the ramp, finding not four warriors awaiting him, but five. Four he'd expected, but the fifth. Horus Lupercal, the Primarch. Encased in glossy black plate of colossal dimensions, he was a titan amongst giants. The glaring eye on his breastplate seethed in amber, the dark slit at its center seeming to regard Mar with utter indifference. A pelt of resin-stiffened fur mantled Lupercal's shoulders, the long fangs of its upper jaw splayed over one curved shoulder guard. He held Worldbreaker in one hand as easily as Mar might carry a slender data wand. It was of cold iron, its weight unimaginable. His other hand was bladed with Reaper's talons, a tearing weapon as far beyond the power of a lightning claw as a legionary was above a mortal soldier. But it was his face, a face that was both beautiful and cruel, that drew Mar in. A face that was the fountainhead of the Legion. He dropped to one knee, Azadine and Cybal following his lead a heartbeat later.
Sire.
The sensation of great weight on one shoulder cut Mar's words short. Worldbreaker rested on his armor, kept from crushing him only by the Warmaster's great strength. He held the enormous ultra-dense mace at full extension, a feat none gathered there could match.
You've been busy, Tybalt.
Mar kept his head bowed.
I've been fighting our enemies, my lord.
So I gather. Drawing up missions of your own and executing them with my ships.
Mar finally dared look up, and a tremor ran down his spine as his eyes met those of the Warmaster. Better men than he had quailed before that iron gaze. Armies had laid down their weapons rather than stand against this mortal god. Yet even in the storm cloud fury, he saw a glimmer of amusement behind this show of anger. Hoping he was right, Mar knew there was only one way to respond.
I did, sir. To prove the broken warriors we left in our wake at Istvan are no longer broken. They're organized, efficient, in contact.
Horus removed Worldbreaker from Mar's shoulder.
How do you know this?
Because he is going to tell me.
Mar rose and gestured to the Stormbird. A handful of legionaries led Octa Uldin down the assault ramp, his neck clamped in the spiked collar of a man-catcher. Snapping sparks of electrical discharge burned the meat and metal of his neck, and his steps were stiff and ungainly as artificial nerves were stimulated with pain signals.
One of the Iron Tenth. You took him in this system?
Him and his vessel. Lurking out by the Azoth Gate. Keeping watch on our comings and goings and passing that information back to Shadrach Medusan.
Abaddon, standing behind the Warmaster, bristled at the mention of Medusan's name.
You can't know that for sure.
Can't I? While you were all sitting on your complacent behinds, I took action. You were so sure of your own prowess that you never gave any other Legion credit for being as good, as resilient, as tough as us. Well, guess what? They are strong, and they are fighting back.
Horus stepped in and took hold of Mar's shoulder guards, pulling him in tight to embrace him in a clatter of plate.
Tybalt Mar, you've been away from your brothers too long, I think.
Mar's words failed him again. His obedient warriors forced Octa Uldin to his knees before the Warmaster. Horus turned and extended his powered talon, a single killing claw lifting Uldin's battered chin. The Iron Father's eyes were gone, plucked by Azadine's mortuary blade, and now nothing more than sliced cables hung down over his cheeks.
But you have become the lone wolf, my son. The hunter who works best alone.
What are you saying, sire? Exile?
No. But whether you are right or wrong, Tybalt, you will cost me dearly. If you are right, and Medusan is raising a storm in our wake, then I must send warriors to find him and kill him. If you are wrong, I must punish you for your disobedience. So, which is it to be?
Mar took a deep breath. Certainty filled him.
I am not wrong.
Horus regarded him for a moment as though weighing up which option would cost him the least. But that glimmer of amusement was still there, and Mar wondered if the others had seen it or even knew Lupercal had made his decision long before Mar's Stormbird had landed.
Tell me what you want, Tybalt. Do you want to hunt down these shattered legions, root them from their shadowed lairs and drive them into the light? Destroy them?
I want to finish what we started at Istvan.
Then you will be my hunter in the void. I will give you ships and warriors, weapons and power, to do what must be done to end this threat.
Abaddon stepped forward.
My lord, the campaign
will succeed or fail, with or without Tybalt.
Horus fastened his gaze upon Mar once more.
I go to Molech, Tybalt. Tell me what you are going to do.
Mar stood tall, with Cybarl and Azadine at his side.
My lord, I'm going to bring you Shadrach Medusen's head.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.